you got late call up onto the bench. Mike got 10 minutes on the wing at the end when the game was basically over.
Yeah.
But you went in and played 13, probably the most pivotal position defensively and offensively. And it's not only against like a second string team, it's like, oh, you're playing the world champions. Like, do you know what I mean? So, what was your mindset like? Or were you typical Jimmy O'Brien, just, ah, sure, look, see what happens?
I was kind of like that. I was trying to be like that. I was just obviously like a bit scared or whatever, a bit nervous kind of. But when I came on at 13, like the way like Gary just went in 12 and the way they kind of didn't miss a beat, like no one actually like was like looking at me like, oh crap, Jimmy's at 13, or everyone's just like, all right, everyone seemed so calm with me moving in. So that made me calm. I was like, oh, okay, like they all obviously back me.
Joe presents House of Rugby together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of House of Rugby with proud sponsors Bank of Ireland. I'm going to start with the bad news. We've no Greg today. He's up the mountains with his beautiful O'Shea clan. So Greg, we hope you're having a ball and we can't wait to have you back. But the good news is I am joined by the wonderful, charming, charismatic Munster man that is Jason Hennessy. Jason, how are you?
I'm good, Lindsay. How are you? How was your Christmas?
It was great. Once the boy got all he wanted from Santa, then all of Christmas was good to go. So he got his Lego train and old school roller skates and Buzzy Bee. It's a like wasp remote control car. The child has endless and a dance mat, which I am looking forward to trying over the next couple of days with him. So all good this then. How was yours?
Good. Quiet Christmas back in the family house. I ended up cooking dinner for everyone, but I made sure I had a glass of wine in my hand throughout the entire process. So it was kind of fun, to be honest, which was actually enjoyable.
Good man yourself. How did that go?
Good. So I was a chef myself years ago, so I always get caught doing the Christmas dinner. So enjoy it.
Keep Jesus, that's
happy.
Grand.
We're all fed. We're all fed.
All the crew will be waiting for an invite down to Limerick Park.
All fed and found, and yeah. But no. And I'm caught doing it again today now for the 27th. So they'll be last without me.
Well, I tell you what, when the shoe fits, you cook away, my friend. Gordon Ramsay has nothing on yet, say.
That's it. Telling you.
Well, we'll crack on here. Yep. We're going to start with the first part, but in part two, we will have an interview with Jimmy O'Brien coming up on the show, and producer Pat, the magic man that he is himself, was speaking with Bristol, Tonga, and former Ulster and All Black star Charles Piatow. But let's start off with the festive Interpros. Jason, how are we feeling after last night's result?
Do you know what?
Truthfully.
No, honestly, truthfully, like, first of all, it was a cracker of a game. It was a proper Stephen's Day Interpro. You know, I mean, it's always been one of those games that everyone looks forward to on the fixture calendar, because it's a special game, because it's Stephen's Day, it's 26,000 in Thomond Park, it's Leinster. It's always going to be a good game. And it was, like, I think particularly the first half, very physical. You knew straight away what you were watching. It wasn't a normal game of rugby. It was like, oh, shit, everyone is up for this, everyone is ready. And honestly, I'm let down by the result, like, but you know, when you lose, you lose. But they only lost by a point. I don't think Munster are that far off. They gave me so many signs last night that they haven't given me in recent weeks and in recent months, that you're kind of like, yeah, I like this whole experiment of Jack Crowley at 12. I know he wasn't great last week, but he's grown into that role. To be honest with you, the only thing that let me down in the whole game really was probably that last try from Leinster. So, I mean, Scott Penny's try was magic. That was just beautiful from Sheehan and Allen. But Sheehan's try, if you look at it again, kind of, they're all standing up trying to tackle the Leinster guys, and they just walked over them like schoolboys. Nobody got low, and they made it look so easy. And when you watch it back, you're like, they should have defended that better.
And you know what, you're right, because I was watching it. So that Scott Penny was magic. He got man the match now, which I thought he was quiet, to be honest. Now, he worked tirelessly, 25 tackles, but kind of he's normally, you know, so potent at the breakdown. But he did have a good game. He came up when he needed to. I thought he was going to be in the corner for that crossfield kick. I was like, okay, we only saw glimpses of what Leinster could do. But the fact that actually Sheehan scored against John Ryan and killer, what's his name? Dave Kilcoyne. The fact that two of the more physical, experienced men, and he got down low, I was probably disappointed for you. Considering he's absolutely made a shit of Leinster's breakdown. He's did so well. He's bullied us at the scrum. The line out, I thought, was an absolute battle. It was toe for toe. But really, it was men against boys at times. I kind of, you saw Leinster's inexperience at that time. However, the young lads of Leinster, I think you get no better learning than to come through with a 1-point win. You probably didn't really deserve it, but they stuck with it. You know, they didn't deviate exactly from what it is, and they stuck with it. But considering you did so many good things, like Thomond Park, the noise of the crowd, were you there?
No, I wasn't. I'm still fucking recovering from this chest infection, so I wasn't taking the chance of going in. So I watched it at home. It looks like a good few of my friends.
You could just hear it though, couldn't you?
Sorry? I could hear it. And they said, like, it was absolutely, the atmosphere was incredible. And you can hear it coming through the television. You're like, that's the old Thomond Park, and that's the way it should be. But, I mean, yeah, as you said, look, I mean, it was men against boys at times, right? But you have to also factor in, like, and Pat mentioned this beforehand, like, we do have to factor in the fact that that's a Leinster team without Tadhg Furlong, James Ryan, Josh van der Fleer, Kellen Darce, Jamieson Gixon-Paap, Johnny Sexton, Robbie Henshaw. You know, Munster ain't going to get a better chance. And that's one side you will be worried, because if you look at that Munster team, I know we've got a few guys out injured, but is there many more guys to come back in there? Like, that's probably near enough to as strong as a team we can put out. And we still can't beat Leinster. Missing all those players at home with 20, probably out of that 26,000 was probably 20,000 of them, maybe 21,000 of them, Munster fans. So that would worry you a small bit. You know, I mean, are we that far off?
See, I don't think so. I know Graham Rowntree was pretty annoyed after the game. You know, obviously, I think it's now 4 from 4 you've lost in Thomond Park. You wanted that fortress. Leinster have won 10 out of 10 in the URC. They are a machine. And I think, you know, being an ex-player, and you know yourself, winning is a habit. You know what I mean? And I thought, I watched the game now, I was... The referee, I'm not going to give out about the referee, but at times I thought, you know, it was a derby, but I thought, Chris, but we didn't at times let the game flow into the exhibition it could have been. Like, the only time we saw some good breaks, I thought Anton Frisch would stand out for you. I really liked that 10-12 axis with Joey Carberry.
Jack Crowley.
And I thought Crowley, and their game management and kicking crossfield and putting... Like Hugo Keenan, we don't always see knocking on the ball in that aerial battle, and he did. And Leinster were under pressure at times. Like, they were, like, Jamie Osborne, I thought, was great. I thought that battle in the centre partnerships was toe for toe. And yeah, I just thought you're probably a little bit right. Munster still need depth to come on and finish games. I thought Craig Casey was one of the few that come on and kind of just again sped up that game and gave Leinster trouble and started to really turn the knife.
Yeah.
But just to finish the game is probably the only thing he's lacking right now. And I do appreciate the point that, yeah, Leinster were missing loads. They were missing loads, but they're still a well-oiled machine. Like, Jamie Osborne's back at the, you know, offload. Just, he had no right to A, offload it, and B, Luke McGrath had no right to catch it. And then we'd a break. But then it epitomised exactly where Leinster probably let themselves down was. The lads were so slow to the breakdown.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And... I think it was Calvin Nash who, again, I was really, really... How did you think he did?
I think he's a good player. I think Shane Daly did well, because I was only saying it before the game. I know I said we weren't missing too many players, but to be missing John Hannon, I think it was a big one. I think he's playing well at the moment, but to be missing Mike Haley, I think, was a huge one. I think Mike Haley's probably been our best player this season. I mean, he's probably our best attacker. He's just become so consistent. So... Even though Shane Daly played so well, we did miss Mike Haley out there, because, as I said, he's been so good this year. Frisch, again, I go back to what you said about Frisch. He's my new favourite player. Where did this guy come out of? If you watch his story, I love his story. Like, so, like, when he was growing up, like, he always wanted to come to Ireland. There's pictures of him as a kid with his two brothers wearing an Ireland jersey. He's very much not a Frenchman. He's very much an Irishman and a Frenchman all his life. And he said when he was watching the games when he was younger, you know, his father would be cheering on France, but he'd be watching the Ireland. He'd be getting emotional watching Ireland going, and his dream was always to come over here. And he played for Ireland with the emerging nations over the period there recently. And I don't know, there's something about him. Do you know? I mean, it's funny. We spent all this money on Malachi Fekitoa, and everyone forgot about Frisch. And he's like, Fekitoa can't get near the squad now. Never mind the starting lineup, because this guy's so good. So it's fantastic. Like, it's a great signing, because he reminds me of those old signings when Munster used to sign centres. They signed guys like Trevor Halstead, Lemifemi Vapi, Rua Tupoki, not going away and signing these big superstars, signing these guys who are used to the grind and have a, something to prove. And they're the kind of players that we need. And
yeah,
the players we should be recruiting going forward.
Absolutely, because I think they embed themselves in the DNA of Munster rugby. Do you know what I mean? And that it doesn't that DNA doesn't suit everybody. It doesn't run through everyone's blood that you sign, because I think I'm obviously stone cold Leinster supporter. However, we have our DNA and our style of rugby. But I've many friends that I've played of you guys who are just, you know, Munster rugby oozes through them, and that's what you're brought up on. And you can tell from every, whether you're a supporter or players or even playing against them, like, you know, Leinster and Munster would come up against each other, and there's big, big days in a Munster jersey, no matter what team you play for. But Frisch is definitely one of my favourite. I thought he's been big, big signing. And I actually, this sounds really bad, but I totally forgot about Fekitoa until I saw his Instagram post with his family on Christmas. And I was like, oh, God, yeah, I forgot about him. Yeah. So where do... Like, did Munster bottle it? Where do you have to go to now start to kick on the season, get your Champions Cup back on track, really make a challenge for the URC and get back in those Champions Cup places? Like, what do you need a full squad available to you?
I think it's a mentality thing, Lindsay, to be honest with you. I think, yes, they are missing a few guys. There's a few guys to come back in. I think they're in big trouble, to be honest with you, when John Ryan leaves at the end of January, as I just don't see a tight end that's going to step up.
He did well yesterday.
He did well, but like, you know, as I said before, I don't trust Stephen Archer in there. I don't think Salanoa is quite there yet. I don't think Knox is quite there yet. And Tighthead, as you know, as a prop, is such a pivotal position. I think we're lacking a hooker. I think we've got good loose heads there. But I think the big thing for Munster at the moment seems to be that mentality. So, like, we can see the two tries with Leinster down to 14 men. You know, and that comes down to mentality. Because, as I said, going back to that second try, that was just, it was schoolboy stuff. They just kind of stood there while Leinster tapped and went quickly, and then I tried to tackle them around the shoulders, tried to hug them all over the line, and they just bulldozed through with ease. And like, that just comes down to get low, get ready. Like, you're at home, 26,000 fans behind you. You're playing Leinster. You should not let tries in that easy. You know, you should not. It's not acceptable. So that comes down to mentality, because we've seen in glimpses this season that the talent is there. And there is good players in that squad. But sometimes they let themselves down, where it's just a bit of mentality and focus. Like, you've got to be switched on at all times. Do you know, I wouldn't see Leinster conceding a try like that. They just wouldn't allow it.
No, and that's probably the difference in how we got over the line is, one, no matter what, like, attacking-wise, it didn't really happen for Leinster, because we really let our breakdown, like, be slowed down and let Munster make a shit of it, and that really impacted our attacking game. However, they didn't deviate from their defensive setup, and they really just smothered, like, we just stuck to the process, I suppose. Whereas I would agree, I think there was just lapses in concentration, and it does happen. You know yourself, you're playing against, either you have a full complement and you kind of, you know, everyone just kind of switches off, and the team who loses a man usually then steps up and kind of, you know, turns the knife. And I think that's just what happened in that 10-minute period. Leinster took advantage of just galvanising themselves mentally, and everyone kind of took a step forward. But look, I have to agree. I hope everyone enjoyed it. I certainly did. It was nail-biting. I didn't think we'd get over the line, but it was an absolute cracker. Hopefully we'll have another round when Connacht come to Leinster. And I think you guys are going to Ravenhill, are you?
Yes, Ravenhill up next for the Munster. So I say, look, I mean, look, I know they're down 11th at the moment, but they're only 4 points off fifth. Do you know? So I'm not looking at top four this year for Munster. I don't even think, even if they got top four, it's probably the wrong season for them to be looking at that. I think now is just solidify, make sure you're in eighth position, and keep building. Like, a lot of you, another thing we mentioned last night, you know, Patrick Campbell coming on last night, scoring a great try. There's another good young player coming through. There's a lot of good young players coming through Munster, and they just need to make sure that they get that eighth spot, because we bloody well need Champions Cup next year. Like, because it'll be a sad day when Munster aren't in the Heineken Cup.
No, do you know what? Squeaky bum time, and no better club to do it than Munster Rugby. And I did like Patrick Campbell's try against James Lowe, who bit in, and Campbell finished well, and just that. He just chucked the ball and was like back on track. So yeah, plenty of bright sparks to look at Munster. But I think we'll move on if we're happy enough to.
Yeah, move on.
And we will move on to another big Interpro. Another one full of drama. Did you watch it? Connacht 20, Ulster 22.
Yes.
And another kind of...
It was, look, it was like, I mean, Ulster looked like they were coasting. They looked like they were doing, like, this was in the bag. But, like, Connacht with those two very, very late tries, and, like, they very well could have snatched a draw. I mean, Jack, look, it wasn't the easiest kick for Jack Carty. I wouldn't be blaming Jack Carty for that kick. It was on the wrong side. It was a pressure kick. Probably himself, he'd probably feel let down, because at the end of the day, he's a professional, you know, and he would have thought, I probably should have got that. But it wasn't the easiest of kicks. But look, Connacht, I think, obviously they'll be disappointed that they lost. Of course they will. But the way in which they finished that game, like, they can hold their heads high, like, to score those two late tries. And they looked like they were dead and buried long before that. So.
Yeah, but what do Connacht, like, so I'm watching the game and I'm like, right, we've Ulster, I think to myself, you know, 60 minutes in, right, Ulster are cruising. Ulster are back to their best. They've had a couple of weeks of drama, inconsistent, non-performances. I just don't know where they've been on holidays. They haven't been the Ulster team that we've seen over the last kind of 18 months.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, sound, they're back on track. And next of all, they just capitulate. Like, for Stuart Little's try, it was like soft shoulder, offload. It was like champagne rugby. Gets in, you know, little kick. Like, again, back to oozing confidence. Tom Stewart is scoring a sixth and seventh try. Rob Little, sorry, not Stuart Little. That's a cartoon character. But Rob Little scored in the corner. Tom Stewart then is scoring sixth and seventh try. And, you know, as I said, they looked to be cruising. And then, you know, we're talking about Munster and their mental resolve. And next of all, yeah, they kind of implode. Now, as I said, like, it's hard to not have it, you know, when you're losing that, you know, what it was, a 20-8. And even when they got a try back with Caelan Blade, who made a break, John Cooney then scores, and you think, oh, right, they're gone again. And then they just come up and, you know, Adam Byrne gets in a good signing in the corner. And yeah, I just think it's two teams who are inconsistent right now and need to find a bit of form and consistency. And yeah, I just don't know what each team have to do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think Ulster will be delighted anyway after that horrific loss to Sale, and then the kind of drama over the La Rochelle game, just to get a W back on the board, because Ulster, as you said, their season looked to be going really well, and it just kind of went off. And that happens Ulster a lot. You know, I remember we had that chat with Darren Cave last year, and it seems to happen to them a lot, where they kind of fire for most of the season, and then when it matters, then you're like, Jesus Christ, we should have been winning this game, you know? So I think they'll be at least be happy. But with Connacht, yeah, Connacht will be disappointed. As I said, they're at home. No one wants to lose a game at home, no matter what it is. And they're kind of, it's much the same at Connacht this year. And, you know, they look good in parts. They play some good rugby. We're all saying, oh, it's great that they came back, but they still lost, unfortunately. And that's just that consistency that Connacht are missing. And look, they're going to have a new coach coming in next year with Andy Friend leaving. Maybe that'll be a good thing for him. And that's not anything against Andy Friend, because he's a brilliant coach and he's done a lot for Connacht. But maybe his style of rugby doesn't quite suit, because they do play entertaining rugby. But at the end of the day, you're judged on your results. And if you look back over his period with Connacht, they haven't done quite well. I mean, I know they got to their first ever knockout stages of the Champions Cup last season, but they did it with one win. That's just the way that stupid format is at the moment. So, I mean, you can't, I wouldn't take much from that. So maybe it is, like, I mean, people forget, it's not that long ago when Pat Lamb was there, Connacht were winning the Pro 14, or the Pro 12, what it was at the time, which is now the ORC.
Yeah.
So maybe it is time for Connacht for change, and maybe that's what, I know Andy Friend is moving back for family reasons, but I don't know. They have a very, very good squad there. That's what we have to remember. Very, very good squad on paper.
Very good squad, and I think at the moment for me, they're kind of like always the bridesmaid, never the bride. Do you know what I mean? They're always there, thereabouts, you know. And maybe the announcement of Andy Friend has kind of let that, and they just need to get over the season. But they're down at 12th now. So is it a case where they just concentrate now on Champions Cup and try to, or not Champions Cup, Challenge Cup, and try to get something out of that and get some silverware that way, or how they're going to balance it?
I don't know. But I said, like, you know, I just said, like, they're down, like, we're giving out how bad Munster are this season and how poor they are, and like, they're down where Munster are, like, and no one, like, everyone seems to think Connacht are doing grand, which is, that's not good. That's, they need to get out of that mentality. Like, Connacht should be pushing on, because as I said, they're not the Connacht of old. Connacht have a brilliant squad on paper. They've got some fantastic players. It's littered with internationals. That is a squad that's capable of more. That's a squad that's capable of pushing up into that top eight, and even pushing into that top four. Like, they're, without a doubt, they're capable. So it will be interesting to see who they bring in. I'm not sure who's out there at the moment. I haven't even heard much talk about who's been linked with the role. But it'll be very interesting to see who they bring in there, and because it's a good job, it's a big job, whoever takes it.
But it's a great job. But the other thing is, I think the world of rugby right now, like every, you know, we've all the South African teams in the ORC, they're now in obviously Champions Cup and Challenge Cup, and you know, rugby seems so, there's so many clubs out there looking to kind of thrive and, you know, reinvent themselves and kind of win, you know, so the competition even for clubs and coaches, and is it that big a club to draw someone with a big name? Is that what they need to get big players? Or is it a case of they stick to their tried and tested Pat Lam, Andy Friend, who are great guys who just come in and kind of work their magic with a squad who's probably littered with great players, but need that just consistency and belief and be able to challenge for, I suppose, compared to a lot of clubs around, is you know, they're on a much smaller level.
It's a tough one. I mean, like, there isn't that many. Eddie Jones is looking for a job at the moment. We get Eddie down there.
Can you imagine that? Eddie, come on, American Magic. Forget about the Eagles. Forget about USA. Come on.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that kind of, like, I don't think one of those big flashy names. But look, there isn't too many big flashy names in rugby. Like, it's not kind of like we're not into the soccer manager territory yet. There isn't too many. Eddie Jones is one of the few big personalities in rugby that are there. And, you know, look, I mean, they did it like someone like Pat Lam. Like, you know, people kind of, his career was a bit kind of stagnant before he came to Connacht, and now he's after reinventing himself again into one of the best coaches in the world. Andy Friend, they kind of, if he was a sevens coach who wasn't really a big name in rugby union. So I think I trust Connacht. Like, I mean, there's some good people there to do the research and attract the right man that will suit their rugby. But as I said, maybe it's time to move away from someone who just plays entertaining rugby and get someone in who wins rugby matches instead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think a big test for them now will be coming down to the RDS to play Leinster over the festive season. And one man that we spoke to recently was Mr. Jimmy O'Brien, who should feature in that game. And now we're going to go into our second part of our interview with Jimmy O'Brien. So enjoy.
And then with you then, you're kind of basically in the Irish squad now, which is another Six Nations squad to be picked. Hopefully you'll be in it. We presume you will be. But before we even talk about that upcoming Six Nations, you played in the Autumn Nations series. And it was kind of a bit of a whirlwind for you because you're initially kind of in the A squad kind of buzz. And then you got the last minute call up. You ended up playing 13 against the best team in the world champions. Yeah. And you had a stormer of a game. What was that like for you?
Yeah, it was pretty mental. Like, yeah. Because I obviously got picked the A team at the start of the week. And I was kind of disappointed. Like, I kind of like wanted to get my chance, or I thought I had a chance. So then I was kind of a bit down, but then I was like, all right, just come out, like, play well, whatever, for the A's. And then I kind of heard Robbie kind of like tweet his hamstring, but like, you don't know who's going to be the next person up. You have a clue. Like, and yeah, it didn't tell me. I just went into, everyone went in the A's, and the first team went into Shelburne then to get prepared for the games. You go in and what a pretty much meal and the captain's run, and I was walking down the hallway just to go into the A meeting, there's a team meeting, and Faz just caught me in the hallway and was like, oh, have you heard? And I was like, no, not really, like maybe half. And
he what's
was like,
on the dinner? What's on the menu?
He was like, God, oh, you're on the bench, like you don't need to go to the A meeting. I was like, oh, great.
It was that last minute.
Yeah. Oh, but I think some lads are kind of like, so like Hugo nearly ruined it because they got on to, so they had like made the decision way earlier in the day, but no one had like rang me. And they got on to Hugo to get on to Will, to get on to my parents to come up, because they do kind of like a jersey presentation the night before or 2 days before. And and Will texted me being like, oh, you're on the bench. And I was like, well, I haven't heard anything. Like, what have you heard? And then he just didn't reply to me. And I was like, Will.
Oh, no.
I was like, hey, what have you heard? Like, you obviously have heard something. And he just wouldn't text you back. Like, and he didn't come back to the house then either. So I didn't see him. So I was kind of like, I had a half inclination. I was like, all right, maybe there's something, but like, I'm not taking it until I hear, like, and then he just told me then, and then my parents were actually downstairs. I like went off, rang my parents, told them I was on the bench, and they were like acting all surprised, and they were actually downstairs in the shower and like having a drink, getting ready to like come up and like surprise me. Them two and Zoe, my girlfriend, were downstairs, like, so yeah, I was so surprised when they walked in. Like, I didn't even know that was a thing or anything, because it's my first time, and they just like opened, walked in the door, and like all the lads were there and all the staff and stuff. I was like, what's going on here? Like,
and did that change then? Was that the moment it kicked in? We're like, okay, shit, I'm on the bench here. Like, this is big. Did it make you emotional? Or
A little bit. See, my parents made me a little bit emotional. Yeah, I was kind of like, geez, this is actually probably a big thing, like, and everything. And yeah, it got me a little bit emotional there, that. And then after that, kind of the next day, I didn't really think very much. To be honest, I didn't think I'd be getting brought on.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, last minute. So soon. Yeah, I was like, you get brought up like that last minute, you're not really expecting, you're like, oh, they'll probably bring on someone else instead of you or whatever. Even when Shu went down on the bench, I remember sitting there, I think Jack Conan would be like, oh, Jimmy, get up. And I was like, they're not going to bring me on. I was like, Joey, said to Joey, I was like, Joey, they're definitely bringing you on here, like.
Yeah.
And then someone shouted at me. I was like, oh, crap. Like, yeah, they're actually bringing me on.
Because you got 53 minutes. Am I right with that? Yeah. Yeah,
something like that. Yeah. So I didn't think they'd bring me on that early, but obviously they did. Thankfully, yeah. So.
Brilliant. So. Now, we gave you that the standout moment of the pod that week. It was
we
just,
did.
We just
never
thought you were
competing
unbelievable.
Moment, yeah.
We're fanboying of you.
But it's like it's not as if, like as you're saying there, Jimmy, you got a late call up onto the bench. Mike got 10 minutes on the wing at the end
That's
and the game
was thinking,
basically over.
Yeah.
You went in and played 13,
yeah.
probably the most pivotal position, defensively and offensively. And it's not only against like a second string team. It's like, oh, you're playing the world champions. Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? So, what was your mindset like? Or were you typical Jimmy O'Brien just, ah, sure, look, see what happens?
I was kind of like that. I was trying to be like that. I was just obviously like a bit scared or whatever, a bit nervous kind of. But when I came on at 13, like the way like Garage went in 12 and the way they kind of didn't miss a beat, like no one actually like was like looking at me like, oh crap, Jimmy's at 13, or everyone's just like, all right, everyone seemed so calm with me moving in. So that made me calm. I was like, oh, okay, like they all obviously backed me or whatever. Like everyone was like, yeah, like it was kind of normal. It didn't really change anything. So that gave me a lot of confidence when I went on. And then like just after, once I got into it, it just kind of felt like another game. So once the kind of first couple of moments, I think I had a carry, the first thing Johnny hit me on a carry, and then after that, like, it was kind of get into the game, yeah, and normal after that.
Do you need, as a player, do you need, because I know I would have, like, give me a good carry just to get me in the game and you can kind of switch in?
Not particularly. I wouldn't say a good carry because I wouldn't be carrying too well myself.
But something for you, a good exit kick, whatever.
Get me a neutral carry, get me over, get me to the game line, I'd be happy. No, not really. I'd be kind of in it, but off the bench, yeah, I'd find, if I was coming off the bench, I'd want to do something early, trying to get into it.
Yeah.
But it's so. Starting not too much, but yeah, off the bench, I'd say, yeah.
Nice.
Incredible, man. And then you kept playing on in the Autumn Nations series. You played a full back. Me and Lindsay went to see you play against Australia. You played in the wing.
Yeah.
Incredible couple of days, a couple of weeks for you.
Yeah, wasn't expecting that going into the camp at all. Like, I was just praying I'd get like one kind of opportunity just to kind of get my first cap or whatever and kind of show that I could play at the level. Like, and then to play the three games, like, it was, yeah, dreams. Yeah.
What was your first cap song? Because I know that's tradition.
Ain't no mountain high enough.
Oh,
nice. Yeah, I had to sing that.
You going to give us a bar?
No, not a chance. I'm not a very good singer. Okay. I don't think anyone would want to hear me sing.
We'd be the judge of that.
Yeah, it's key to pick a song that everyone knows.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
So
oh, you need
in.
That, yeah.
What's yours, Lindsay?
What was mine? Oh, mine was probably something ridiculous. Take her up to Montour or something, I think. Or something, the Dubliner. Something Dubliner with a busload of country people who probably just wouldn't join in for the sake of it. Yeah, so that'd be me, yeah.
Lads try not to join in, though. Like, as in, like, you hear lads again, like, shh. Like, if I'm singing, like, when some half people start trying, and lads are like, no, stop. Like, they want you to, like, burn up their bass.
Do at least a verse with no help. Like, brilliant.
Give us yours.
Mine, I have a few. Because the worst thing ever is when you're sitting on the bus, and then you know one of mine.
The punk rocker.
Yeah, punk rocker, yeah. Joe Punk Rocker.
No.
Yeah. You do know you just want me to sing it.
No, I don't. Tell me, Glenn.
Oh, I wish I was a punk rocker with flowers in my hair.
Come on,
see, everyone knows
Come
it.
On, everybody.
But if that's been taken, then I do Robbie Williams. What is it? Sit and wait. Doesn't it? Do you know that one?
Yeah.
What's that one called?
Angels.
There we go.
I'm loving angels.
Exactly, because everyone
Man
knows
of many
it.
Talents.
I didn't have to sing too many, though, thank God. But Jimmy, coming into the Six Nations now and the World Cup next year, what's the plan? Obviously, you want to be in the squads.
Hopefully. Not trying to think too far ahead, like just kind of play all the games for Leinster, hopefully in Six Nations, and again, hopefully play a couple of games there, and then like, if I got to work, like a year ago, I didn't think I had any chance of kind of getting to the World Cup or whatever, and never thought I'd be in kind of position I am where I'm kind of like on the fringes and could get in. So like, I'd be delighted if I got into that. Yeah, I'd be.
Do you kind of have one eye on the Six Nations and World Cup, or is it very much so? All right, we've Munster and Stevens Day. What's the kind of buzz?
Very much so, like kind of the next game.
Definitely Munster on Stevens Day. Yeah. You keep focused on that boy.
But you've really like shown, man, that you can play at the top level now, and you played a 13, 15 and winger at the top level against top teams as well. So it would be expected, because you're so versatile as well, to be in those squads. Like, and just imagine playing in the World Cup in France. Like, I presume all the O'Briens will be going over.
Jimmy O'Brien scores a win and try World Cup.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. The versatility works for me, but like, who knows? Like, just trying to play. Once you just play well, stay injury free, and just try and play well for Leinster, get into Six Nations squad, hopefully, and then just keep trying to play well. Like, that's the main thing, and then see what happens. Like, but yeah, it'd be unbelievable.
It would be unbelievable. Yeah, to be part of the number one team in the world, going to a World Cup, like targets on your backs, and the fact you're so versatile. I don't know if you'd agree with me, Lindsay. I presume you would, because he's so versatile. He's one of the first names in the team sheet.
You would be certainly for me, and I'm not just blowing smoke up your backside, right? Because I suppose, like, if you look at the wings, right, we said about Ireland's rich vein of talent at the minute, and like, obviously Keith Earls has been back there now, Robert Balakoon, Mac Hansen, you
James Lowe.
James Lowe, who's back and absolutely motoring. He, like, again, no drop off from his injury. So you're kind of looking at the wings going, right, I'd hate to be in there. Yeah. And then we went from Rob Kearney thinking, God, who's going to kind of, it's Johnny Sexton, who's going to replace him? Hugo comes in. Then you're like, God, he's now so integral to everything we do well. And then you're there now, able to step into him. Do you know what I mean? And then centres as well. We've had injuries, suspension. So I think for Ireland to have someone of your talent and so versatile, it's key to us, especially when you're limited on numbers going to a World Cup. You know, to have you there to be able to fit into any of those roles then takes pressure off, I think.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully they think the same, the coaches. But yeah, that's kind of said that to Leo, like, jokingly before, like, basically, like, yeah, if you want to go like a 7-1 split on the bench, like, go on, I'll I'll cover everywhere. Like, said to him jokingly and stuff, and he's like, oh yeah, maybe.
No, and I think that's good. We saw it in the Women's World Cup, one of the girls, Claudia McDonald, who had actually standout, actually World Cup, ended up on the bench because of that versatility issue and what the split they wanted to go for their forwards and backs. And that's where I could see you filling that for us. Not off the bench necessarily, but
I'd take anywhere, to be honest.
Yeah, well, the thing, the obvious question would be, because you're so versatile and you can play anywhere from 9 to 15, if you put on a few more pounds, you're probably going to the back row as well.
No.
But do you think that because you're so versatile, it's an easy way to just put you on the bench? I know it's a tough question.
It probably can be,
But you've started then in the Autumn Nation series, so it's a weird one.
Yeah, like, I don't know. It probably can be for a coach. They're like, oh, in between, oh, Jimmy can go on the bench because I can come on if someone else gets injured or whatever. But it hasn't happened. I haven't been on. I used to, like, joke, my mates said I'd be, like, my position is 23. and, like, all my friends are like, yeah, just go aim for 23. Thankfully, I've been starting like a good bit now, and just when I start, then I usually just end up covering. So whoever's on the bench, I'd usually just cover.
Whatever, just move Jimmy around. You're like a chess piece. Just move him there. Put him
there.
Yeah.
Honestly, there's dude at the end of games. Like, I remember in Leinster, they did to me one or two games where just like for the last 10 minutes, when we're like 30, 40 points up, like, they just take off the 10 and I just go in 10. And I wouldn't have ran a 10 like all week. And they're just like, yeah, be fine. And I'm just like, yeah, perfect. And I just call like a mall pretty much every time.
What do you want off this lineup?
Yeah,
mall.
A mall. Yeah, yeah.
Just give us a few minutes.
But I think what is the point of difference for you as well is your left boot. It's very rare to have someone to clear the lines like that. Obviously, James Lowe can do it as well. But you were doing it during the Autumn Nation series. Yeah. So that's an element of your game. Have you worked on it?
Yeah, because I probably got moved out of 10 when I was younger because I wasn't that good at kicking. So I was like a 10. Basically, in Newbridge, we just, like, you never took three. You never, like, cleared your lines. We literally had this philosophy of just running it from everywhere when I played underage. So when I went into, like, Leinster underage teams, I'd run it from everywhere. And they used to be like, oh, you have to, like, play or whatever. But we kind of got away with it, I'd say, because we had such a good team. So I didn't never really have to. So when I kind of came into them years where, like, the games got tighter and stuff like that, I wasn't as comfortable kind of in 10 and like picking off corners and stuff like that because I never really practiced it coming up. I was kind of on good teams that like just played it from everywhere and we used to get away with it. So that's probably why I moved out of playing 10 because my kicking game wasn't that good.
Wow.
Yeah, so then, but then when I started playing for Leinster, I like, the coach started being like, oh, we need to, like, you have to get better at that, like, with your left foot, like, it's a good asset to have because obviously if you have a right foot at 10 and left foot are like to help, it just takes the pressure off the 10.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I've worked a good bit with the coaches, with Bumper in Leinster and then with Caddy in Ireland, like a good bit on working on that and trying to get more distance because obviously Lowie can hit it a bit further than me, he's a bit bigger, but just trying to be more accurate and stuff like that and just use it, because it helps, like the 10s, like, love having a second lad who can kick because it just takes the pressure off them a good bit. Yeah.
Oh, it's huge, man, 100%, it's a great asset to have. I think Pat has a question for you.
I have a fan question over here in the corner. Just after the games, I was wondering, because you played the three games in November, especially even after the debut, did you do any jersey swaps at the end with any of the Springboks?
So thankfully, Keane Healy gave me his jersey to swap. with Willie LaRue, so he was 23 for South Africa. So I got to keep my two first cap jerseys.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that was good, yeah. And then against Fiji, I didn't. I actually started getting my migraines. So that's why I came off the last 3 months. I was starting to get a migraine, like I got a blurry vision or whatever. And I started to get that, so I literally left straight away. I came off and got in a taxi and went back to bed. And then against Australia, I swapped with the winger. I was marking Mark, I can't remember his second name, something like... Eugene kind of second name. He's unbelievable. Oh, yeah.
Can you do it again this week?
Now I'm a Sangy or something. Yeah, crazy. Yeah, yeah.
The 14, he's another man mountain. Yeah. I was like, remember we were watching him from the sidelines? We were like, oh my God, if he goes in front of the footlights.
He's huge. Unbelievable in the air. So he was unbelievable in the air. He was trumping and stuff like that. So yeah, swapped with him. So I have Willie Roo and his jerseys. Yeah, so it was pretty cool getting them.
What about yourself? Are you hoping to be involved? Like you're kind of you played the Perpignan game, didn't you? But are you out now?
Yeah, I injured my hamstring in the Perpignan game, so out for a few weeks now. So got it. I won't be involved in the game, but be cheering the boys on.
Yeah, yeah. The Challenge Cup has been a good way for kind of everyone kind of even just getting the confidence back and form back a little bit. Has it been, like, has the mood been better now the last couple of weeks, the last couple of wins as well?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, we've, spoke about, you know, a different competition, kind of opportunity for us to, you know, start well. And I think so far it's been heading in the right direction. And I think now coming off the back of those two games is being able to take that momentum into this game against Harlequins, but it's a tough challenge ahead. It's always tough playing Quins at the Stoop with their crowd, but hopefully the guys will go well.
And it's been kind of an interesting season, like, for you guys. It's like started off on fire, like, you know, I think it was the four wins in a row, top of the league, and then a dip, and it's like hard to kind of turn it around as well, and then hopefully things are now kind of, you're coming out the other side, like, but what has it been kind of like, you know, as a kind of a season for you guys? How have you found it so far?
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's started off well, and then I think we've been in a tough patch at the moment, but I think having the Challenge Cup come, I think it's been a good time for us, and, you know, just heading into almost the second half of the season, I think there's still time for us to turn it around, and starts Tuesday against Harlequins, so a big challenge ahead. But I think, you know, for us as a club, is just trying to focus now on getting those wins and weekly and letting that momentum build, and then, you know, hopefully where we are at the table, still within reach of, you know, mid-table and stuff like that. So a few wins under our belt, I think, could change what that looks like.
It is a kind of mad league, isn't it? Like that you could find in the space of two or three games, you're right back in the mix. It's kind of like you kind of have to tell yourself that, don't you?
Exactly. That's part of the beauty of the Prem and how tough the competition is. And, the league is always still close, especially around that mid part. And I think we need to start kind of building momentum now and not leave it too late. But I think there's still definitely a chance of improving and trying to hopefully reach their top four.
I kind of just wanted to kind of maybe just go back and just to have a more of a kind of chat about your own rugby career and how it's all gone to date, which is always kind of seems a bit daunting when you kind of think of it like that. But you're from Auckland originally, aren't you? Whereabouts in Auckland are you from?
Mangere's my home for me, so South Auckland. That's kind of always born and bred there. School rugby there, come through all the age grade stuff and represented Auckland and the Blues. Before heading across here to the Northern Hemisphere.
I was lucky enough to live in Auckland for a year. I think I went over, this was after the last Lions tour, a very, like, I'm from Ireland originally, and we thought we were laid back, but people in New Zealand are just, they could teach you a lesson about being laid back. It's a nice way of life, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think living up in Northern Ireland, like, you know, just like the landscape and just how friendly people were, I think there's definitely a lot of similarities, so that helped, like, their transition. But yeah, like you said, like, you know, I think in New Zealand, like, everyone's pretty chilled and easygoing, and just kind of the way life is lived, I guess, there.
I remember in 2011, I was lucky enough to be there, like when the All Blacks won the World Cup. And I always remember, like, everybody celebrated on the Sunday, and then there was a Monday morning headline, and they were worrying about the 2015 World Cup. I would say that just to me, it just goes to show you how crazy everybody in New Zealand is about rugby. Like, it's what's that kind of mindset like? You know, it's like almost like the number one topic of conversation, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, like, coming over like this side of the world, like, you know, I just tell people it's like football to countries here, and the way that, you know, it's almost like a religion, or like, you know, people just love it so much. And like you said, like, expectations on the team's always been so high, and but, you know, that's just the way things are. And then, you know, they get behind the team, they support it, and everyone just enjoys the game.
And then, like, for yourself, like, who, like, let's say, would there be any guys that we know, and maybe you were coming up through schools or underage, that would still be kind of playing around now, that would have been your friends?
Yeah, so I think my kind of age group is probably like Bowden Barrett and Broder and Salek. So now they're like the more senior guys in the team now, so shows my age, but that's kind of my age group then.
And like, for you, like, when you were growing up as well, like, was there ever any kind of other sports, or like, was it just, were you like hell bent on rugby was going to be, and like, when did you even kind of think that it might be an actual career for yourself then as well?
Yeah, I think, like, growing up, like, I always would, like, kind of try every sport and try and play every sport. But as you get older, like, for me, rugby was kind of really the only sport I thought, you know, could really pursue and make it a career. But I think the realization was when I was probably 17 and had kind of interest in the schoolboys, New Zealand schoolboys. And then I thought, you know, maybe if I can make that team, then, you know, try and pursue a ITM contract and push on from there. So that was kind of the point where I thought, you know, I could really pursue this as a career.
And then you were kind of in with the Blues. Like, that was the team I would have went and supported, I suppose, when I lived over there. And I think that Luke McAllister was in the team back when I was kind of following them and stuff like that. But I suppose, like, it's the kind of realization of a dream, is it, to kind of then all of a sudden start lining out with these guys that you might have been watching on TV? And, you know, what does that mean to you as a kind of young guy to all of a sudden, you know, just be thrown in with these guys that you've followed for so many years?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's still would have to pinch myself, like, the first few training sessions, like, being around guys that I've only really, like, supported and followed on TV, and then to be, you know, a teammate catching a ball or running alongside them in training, like, you know, have moments where you think, like, is this real or not? But it's just an awesome feeling to you know, to be able to learn off them and be a teammate with them at the young age and just soak up as much as you can.
And then I was looking back there, like, at your records, even with the All Blacks, and like, the, like, I've sometimes actually seen, I remember even over Zoom, they were showing, you know, footage of, like, family members when they were getting the news that their, you know, son was playing for the All Blacks. And it's like such an emotional moment. Can you remember that first time when your debut was coming around and letting the family know that you were going to play?
Yeah, for sure. I think I was, we'd played a game with the Blues down in Dunedin against the Highlanders. And lucky enough, I think my parents and one of my brothers had come to watch the game. So we got told in front of the team, it was a few of us, I think Francis and Saili and Stephen Lutour was named that campaign as well. And so it was nice to be told in front of your teammates and by the coach, because I guess you kind of form a Super Rugby helps get you into the team, and a lot of those other guys in the shed plays a huge part in the team going well and your own individual success as well. But yeah, like, that's one of the best feelings, just to let your family know, let my parents know, and just see the joy. I think there's a few tears that came down from my parents, but just they're very proud and happy.
And then I was looking, even like your record, I think you'd, like, I actually almost had to double check it, 17 games, 17 wins for the All Blacks. Like, so you played and never lost a game for them. Like, it's insane, isn't it? Like, you're a lucky charm for them in a way.
Yeah, for sure. No, it was, you know, quite a special feeling. And I think it just goes to show that at that time and during those years, just how good the team was. And it's quite a cool thing to think of at the time, looking back at it.
And what, like, I suppose, what would it have been like to kind of, you know, like even to play in a team like with the likes of someone like, you know, like actually like modern day legends, like, you know, Richie McCaw, Dan Carter, like what was it like to kind of train with them and play with them and like kind of like in those kind of week to week basis?
Yeah, I think it's the same thing, like kind of at a super rugby level, like it's just so real. Like now we're talking about like legends of, like you say, legends of the game, like you at that point of what they achieved in the career, and it was amazing. And like, you know, it's, like you said, it's always just, you see them on TV or you support and watch them, and then to be in the same room as them and really just trying to be a sponge and learn as much as you can from them. And then, yeah, it's just a surreal feeling. Like always think it's like not real, or like pinch yourself and being like, you're living a dream. And look back at those times now and see how grateful and lucky I was to be around those legends of the game.
And then like the decision, like I know, like even for the likes of, let's say, Bundy Aki's over here in Connacht, and like he's often spoke about like the, like, you know, that tough decision you're going to have to make to leave your home and kind of even support your family in a way, and kind of you know, kind of again, the financial, you know, benefits are so much better over here in Europe as well. Like, so it is a tough decision, but like you probably faced something similar when you had the chance to go to Wasps. Like, did you have like, can you remember conversations you had with like friends or players or family at the time when you decided to make the move up to the Northern Hemisphere?
Yeah, I think for me, it was definitely one of the toughest rugby decisions that I had to make in my career. And for me, it was just kind of speaking to family and friends and about it. And I think at the end of the day, you know, it was kind of what did you want to achieve from the game. And you know, I think at that time I was lucky enough to play a few tests for All Blacks, and I think yeah, I just thought to myself, you know, as I had a great opportunity to support my family, try something new, and you know, ended up making the decision to come overseas and now having looked back once and being grateful for the experiences, what I've experienced so far and the teams that I've been a part of since then.
And then, yeah, you had that season with Wasps, and then I suppose like even there still to this day, like you're talking to people up in Ulster, still fondly remembered like by a lot of the lads, and kind of, you know, still very much missed by a lot of people up there as well. Like what do you kind of remember your, or is there any kind of standout experience you had from your time at Ulster?
Yeah, I think for me, like the fans there were amazing. Like the home games, the environment there, the chants, like, you know, for that city, like just to see the people come together and cheer them on, like it was a special experience. Because I think like back in New Zealand, like Super Rugby, like we used to play in Eden Park, and although we'll get like maybe 10, 15, 20,000, you know, it was a big stadium, so it didn't really like filled out. But like, you know, at Ulster, playing those home games, and you know, their weather was like, you know, you get used to the weather there, but like you train in every day, but then teams come over and play and they're not used to it. Like it was I had a great time in Belfast and with the club. Like it was a great club, look after me, and I thoroughly enjoyed my time there.
And is there any guys, because I'm trying to even think of the likes of someone like Jacob Stockdale, you would have kind of crossed paths with him, but like any guys that you would have, that are kind of established internationals now, that you would have seen as young lads and went, keep an eye out for this lad?
Yeah, like definitely. I think Jacob at the time had kind of just kind of maybe finished school and was maybe fresh into like a year in academy or whatnot, but he already started breaking out and having, you know, had a great season and made the Ireland team that year. I remember, was it James Hume at the time? Like, yes. He was still around the academy at that time, but like to see his development, and Mike Lowry as well. You know, it was always like training with us when he was in the academy that time, and like to see like those guys really kick on, like Treadwell, when he, you know, he kind of met Ireland when I was there too, but like he's moved on and developed. And even like some of the older ones like Rob Herring and Stu McCloskey, like it's great to see them still in good form and getting more caps. So
yeah, great stuff. And the, I suppose then the decision like to go to Bristol then as well, like was it, can you remember kind of even the conversations back then? And was it Pat Lamb himself? Was he the driving force, or was there anybody else at the time trying to tempt you over to Bristol?
Yeah, I think Pat was the first person I spoke with, and you know, obviously he pitched his vision for the club. But at the same time, my brother was here as well at the club, and a lot of familiar faces like Stephen Latour, who I kind of growing up with. So you know, it was a tough decision to make coming over, because at that time I really was enjoying my time at Ulster. And I think if I look back, if it wasn't any other club but Bristol, I think maybe I would have stayed in Belfast. But now I was grateful for the opportunity. And I think now I've been here 5 seasons now, so longest that I've been at one club. So it's been great.
Yeah, and it's like, have you got, like, as you said, like 5 seasons, like a real kind of affinity with the kind of the people in the area now, and kind of how much rugby means to them as well?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think the year before I came, like, the club, it was in the championship, so they had come up. And then just to see, like, to be fair, the first time I kind of was in and around Bristol, there's a lot of people wearing Bath jerseys. So, like, for that was a bit weird. But I can say now a lot of people, there's a lot more Bristol Bears jerseys now. Like, you know, the turnouts that we have, like, the support speaks for itself. And, you know, how many memberships that we have, and like consistently almost filling out the stadium. So it's been a great experience. And even my family settled here as well. I had two of my kids here, so it's definitely felt like home away from home.
I've seen, what is it, sometimes your name comes up, because I've seen Finn Russell's heading to Bath there next season, and they're talking about the salary he's on. And then you always kind of do a search of Google and you see who are the top earners, and you're always up near the top as well. I was saying, but I'm always interested to talk to rugby players. It's like, do sometimes the salaries reported, is that anywhere near what you're actually getting? Or is that kind of, sometimes do we in the media get it way ahead of ourselves? Like,
yeah, you can't believe what's always what you see in the media. So let's leave it at that.
I was kind of even thinking there about some of the guys. I suppose, like, even your own kind of standout memories, like, you know, I'm sure you're hoping to make even more, like, with Bristol as well. But, like, what's been the kind of standout memory for yourself so far?
I think playing one of the season openers against Bath in the sold out stadium there has definitely been one of the highlights being here. And I think you come to learn in the city, the local derby games mean a lot to the people here in Bristol, and to get a win against either Bath or Gloucester is always you know, means a lot to them. And so being able to that game in particular, I think is definitely a highlight.
It's just even your own kind of even stepping away from Bristol hopes, just your own hopes for 2023. Like, have you got any goal in mind that you'd love to achieve?
Well, with Bristol?
Just in your own life, yeah.
No, I think for me, like, you know, I've got a young family. So for me, it's always just being able to make the most of enjoying my time and look after the kids and see them grow. So, yeah, that'll probably be me.
Well, that's perfect. Well, hopefully you get to spend a good bit of time with them now over Christmas.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's all we have, Jason, for today.
It is. That's it now. That'll do us. It was a pleasure, as always.
We'd like to say,
hopefully Greg hasn't...
as always, a pleasure, himself. My friend.
Exactly, of course.
Yep, we look forward to getting into the new year. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. A big thank you to our partners, Bank of Ireland, who are the proud supporters of the four Irish provinces. And we will look forward to seeing everybody, including Mr. Greg O'Shea, back on the 3rd of January, where we kick off 2023 with hopefully some more magic rugby for the year.
All the best.
Enjoy the rest of your Christmas. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Joe presents House of Rugby, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.